Okay, welcome back to Two Thirds Radio. It's your host, Charlie Giuliani. We have our guest on, Judy Woods, done some fantastic research, regardless what many in the 9/11 truth movement say. She has done some fantastic research. Her website is just loaded with mind-blowing pictures, guys, from Ground Zero that present a picture of what went on there quite different from what most 9/11 truthers are aware of. There was a lot more devastation that went on there, and obviously a lot more powerful explosives that were unleashed, or perhaps something even beyond explosives that caused the pulverization of most of the material of those towers. Where did it go? You know, this is something that most people have failed to address or even recognize, but if you look at pictures of Ground Zero from that day, right after the buildings came down, there's nothing there. I mean, you would expect to see at least a couple hundred feet high piles, 200-plus foot piles of debris just stacked up, and yet it's not there. There's no piles. The things collapsed flat. In fact, you could see a hole. The holes in the ground from the sub-basement levels. Those holes should have been filled in, and there should have been piles stacked up again, at least 100, 200 feet high. Where did all this material go? All of Lower Manhattan was covered in 2 to 3 inches thick of dust. That's where it went. You know, you had your broken chunks of steel scattered here and there, twisted pieces of steel, but that doesn't account for, where's all the sinks, the desks, the chairs, the tables? Every floor in those 110-story towers had multiple bathrooms and offices and, where's the carpet? How does carpet disintegrate into dust? Carpet is very strong. It would have survived those collapses. You would have seen carpets all over the place. Where did they go? Anyway, with no further ado, let's go to Judy Woods. Welcome to the show, Judy.
Oh, thanks.
Sorry about that. We're having a lot of feedback trouble today. I don't know what's happening here.
And I was listening in fine, and then the sound really cut back, so I can barely hear you. Anyway, you made a good point about, what's left, nothing left. And, yeah, how many bathrooms were there? There's quite a few bathrooms on every floor.
Right.
So you think we'd see a roll of toilet paper someplace?
You know, those iron sinks in the kitchens.
But even all of the restrooms, you have lots of rolls of toilet paper. And we saw paper in the streets. So we know paper tend to survive. Why didn't toilet paper?
Yeah. You didn't see any of that?
You didn't see anything like that? You didn't see, like, faucet handles? You know there's plenty on every floor. Yeah, no desks, no chairs.
Well, Louis Cascioli made that point. He said there was nothing there to indicate that buildings once stood there. He says if you didn't know what happened, you wouldn't know what was there. He said it just looked like a disaster area. Yeah, he said there was nothing that you could recognize except a half of a phone keypad. That's the only thing I saw, he said, that you could recognize.
Yeah, I remember he said this big, and his fingers pretty close together.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. So, I mean, what kind of energy could, incur that kind of destruction? We're talking, and again, the carpets, you wouldn't think so at first, but if you really stop and consider it, carpeting is very durable.
But that's
a
good approach. As, folks often say, that, oh, Judy Wood is just, throwing out wild speculations, or we don't need to go to, advanced weaponry. Why do we need that when we can just use, for whatever cause, explosives? Regular run-of-the-mill explosives off the shelf. I don't go to, what do I know? What's in the closet of possibilities? And then eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Let's say I only know about slingshots, firecrackers, and what's another one we can use? BB gun. Those are the only things I know about. So, therefore, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, which one brought down the towers? Is it a slingshot, a firecracker, or a BB gun? I don't know about anything else, so nothing else could have done it because I don't know about it. Instead, what I like to do is look at the evidence. The evidence will tell you what happened. And so far, what I've done is just eliminate what couldn't have happened. With Morton Reynolds, we talked back and forth for quite a while. There's no way you could have had a gravity collapse. So cutter charges or whatever from irregular controlled demolition, that still brings the building down by gravity. The building, we didn't have a gravity collapse. Most of the time, controlled demolition, well, I think about every occasion I know of, they take out the supports at the bottom so you can pretty much drop the building on the ground and slam it to the ground. And that's what busts up the building.
Right.
I was recently watching the video of, I don't know if it's a PBS video, it's Iron Workers clip, where they're showing how the towers were built and how the footings were made and so forth at the base. They made these slurry walls and they dug down to the bedrock. And then they built this base on the bedrock and poured concrete all over it. So the footings were sitting on the bedrock, but they were also embedded in concrete all over the bedrock. So if you dropped a 500,000-ton building and slammed it down on the base, let's say, folks are saying that's what caused all of the pancaking and dustification and so forth, every floor, was that, one floor hit the other and so forth all the way down, and that's what broke up the concrete. Why didn't the concrete at the very bottom get broken up?
Is that what those buildings were estimated to have weighed, 500,000 tons?
500,000 tons.
So think of it, folks. You have two buildings side by side totaling 1 million tons, and after they collapse and all of the dust dissipates, what do you have there? Nothing. Nothing.
And the base isn't even broken up. Concrete fractures easily. And if folks say that's why it busted up on the way, the parts on the way down, you would think the biggest slamming would happen on the base. That concrete isn't busted up. You know, when they're cleaning up Ground Zero, you're left with these rectangular pads, the footprint. It was just this plain, smooth concrete, and they'd sawed off the stubs of core columns and so forth that were sticking up from there. Why isn't that broken up?
Yeah. And at the same time, why do you have cars half a mile away on the FDR freeway there that have the paint burned or vaporized clean off? And those tires, the pictures you have of those, the tire rims.
Oh, yeah, you see the steel belting.
Yeah, but no rubber. And no trace of the rubber. I mean, it's not like the rubber melted and dripped over. There's no rubber present at all. It's clean gone.
It's like it was selected
vaporized
based on the material.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what could have done that? I'm sorry, folks, but we're dealing here with some incredibly powerful whatever it was involved. Obviously,
the opposition then says, oh, the cars were towed. Well, even if you want to use that line and say they were towed, you still have to explain what happened to them.
Where'd the paint go? Where'd the rubber go?
But as for the towing issue, there is photographs. You can imagine how many photographs I've collected. There's plenty of photographs from all around the perimeter of Ground Zero, from all, around the complex. And you can see there's very few cars left. This is, 2 minutes after the buildings go poof. You have, a couple of cars on Church Street, a couple of cars on Liberty, a couple of cars on West Street. There's one little segment on VC Street where I don't have pictures from, right underneath the walkway that goes over to Building 7. So it's a, four car length long, stretch that I don't have pictures of. Now, how many cars can you fit on VC Street?
Mm.
If somebody wants to say that the cars were towed, you have 1,400 cars, toasted cars, at a minimum. That's as many as they owned up to, that they carted off. If you have 1,400 cars...
If they're going to tow them, why would they just dump them en masse at random?
But more than that, if folks are saying that, oh, they were right next to the building, and then they towed them, How many cars can you fit on VC Street? Can you fit 1,400 cars on VC Street?
Well, I like that one photo. This was taken probably early afternoon, 9/11. They hadn't sweeped up any of the debris. You can see firemen rushing down the street. I mean, it was obviously right after the towers had come down. And there's a car that's flipped over on its back.
Yeah, there's several of them that were belly up.
And that wasn't towed. You know, they can't say that was towed. The dust wasn't disturbed at all.
Oh, yeah. I call West Broadway, I call that the swamp. It looked like a swamp with a gooey mess and the fire hoses and wet stuff.
Yeah.
But you have, also have flipped cars here and there. Even if the cars were towed, where were they towed from?
Yeah.
They were towed from adjacent to the towers because you can't fit 1,400 cars on one street.
Well, we know cars flipped. We have the testimony of Ann Thompson from MSNBC.
I should do a page of flipped cars. I've got a flipped car collection, too.
You know, I've only seen one picture of that. Could you possibly email me the pages that have those pictures, the exact page?
I've got them in various places, but I haven't collected them in one place, but that would be kind of a fun thing to do. I've got at least a dozen flipped cars. Different places.
Oh, wow. You're kidding.
My favorite one is looking at WFC1. That's just south of Liberty Street.
Well, if you could just send maybe a couple of those pages to me. The email address is truthhurtsradio@AOL.com, and it's H-E-R-T-Z, Hurts.
I can get it after the show, right?
Yeah, sure. I'd appreciate that.
But it's interesting. That we're looking at.
By the way, mention your website so people can go and.
DrJudyWood.com.
There you go.
DrJudyWood.com. No dots in the Dr. Judy Wood, just DrJudyWood.
Yeah, guys, you got to check these pictures out to see. You got to see this for yourself. I mean, it's just.
If you go to that site, I have my links for the various series. Clickable by pictures. And you can see where the billiard ball picture is. And then to the right of that, you see the directed energy weapons series. Below that's the dirt series. But in the directed energy weapons series, there's a picture of a car. And you just click on that car, and you're taken to page 5 of the directed energy weapon series. Now, I felt the need to post that series before it was finished. Because, dead people tell no lies. They tell no truth. They don't speak. They aren't heard. So if I start putting it up, I don't have any secrets. That was my feeling.
Right.
So I posted this stuff, but then I got busier and busier. There's still one page I really need to give attention to. But it's mostly finished. If you go to that Toasted Car page, you got a whole pile of toasted car pictures down there. Are you there?
Oh, yeah.
And you can see those. Now, picture 65C, that's right near the Brooklyn Bridge entrance. You have what looks like mud all over the streets.
Yeah.
That has to be like the afternoon of 9/11 because they were very quick to clean up the streets. They were more concerned about cleaning up the streets than to look for survivors.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If you clutter the street with street sweepers, you can't get emergency vehicles through. But you could drive over this muck. But they covered the streets with these street sweepers. But if you go down and look at these cars, a car here, a car there, you can say, well, it's a car fire. But these were not adjacent to the WTC.
It sickens me because the excuse given for cleaning things up so quickly, haphazardly, without it being examined is, oh, yes, we were concerned about survivors. Well, that's ridiculous. How long could anybody have survived in that environment breathing those deadly toxins?
They could survive in it if they had survived 1 second.
Yeah, but the point is, even if there were, well, then they go on to say, oh, well, we were concerned also about getting the
we had to get the emergency vehicles in there, and so that's why, you know, we had to take the cars out of the way.
But let's look at how concerned they were about getting human remains. They continue to find bones buried under the street, en masse. I mean, big clumps of bones, sometimes whole bones, found by the dozens. They found two huge steel girders that were never removed, buried under the street. You know, they built a new street there. They recently tore up some of that area. And there it was.
Here's the question I have. So with these toasted cars and all, like the flip cars, they got rid of those within an hour or two.
Yeah.
They did not want people taking pictures of those.
Of course.
And like the cars on West Broadway, I call it the need to scrub the street. Well, you start looking at the dust, this dust is, you know, starts fuming up off the street. Like, you know, steam coming off of a manure pile. But why is it coming off the street? Is the street on fire?
Yeah, that was just a normal collapse due to the intensive fires. Yeah, 800. They admit the fires were 800 degrees, and yet they call them intensive. Anyways, short break, folks. Stick with us. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to True Thirst Radio. Your host, Charlie Giuliani. We've got Judy Wood on the line talking about all the anomalies around Ground Zero and how the buildings could not just have undergone a,
disappearing act.
Pancake. Yeah, exactly. Little pancake collapse. Astonishing what people can be led to believe. So, yeah, we've got the flipped cars. We've got the pulverization. We've got the
fuming. I've got this new vocabulary, and on my dirt series, in the first page, I have a glossary. But the reason why I've chosen this new vocabulary is that if we don't know the exact process by assigning a technical term to it, that's going to bias our observations. So if we just assign, you know, like quality A, quality B, quality C, that gets boring. So I have these other terms, like fuming. It looks like fumes coming off of something. But so the street's fuming.
I haven't noticed that.
What is that? People automatically assume it's smoke. But by assigning that term to it, you're going to bias your observation. So let's look at it. So they quickly cleaned up the streets. Why? Because the streets were fuming. How do you explain that away? Do you say there's molten metal running under the streets? Okay, so they scrub it up, and then you don't have that problem anymore. But what about the lawns?
I haven't noticed the steaming photos, too. I'll have to look for those. If you could send me one or two. Oh, wow, that feedback. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, that got good. I got some, you know, realistic sound level for a moment there. during the break, I tried the streaming thing from the Internet, and I got the wrong show.
Did you go to republicbroadcasting.org?
Yeah.
And you clicked on,
there's a page where for listening, and there's like 32K, 16K.
Yeah.
I just clicked on the 32K, and I got somebody else talking.
Well, I know there's a delay. Maybe you got a commercial or something.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Anyway, about the fuming, that was an interesting aspect of things. Now, we were told right off about this molten metal, high temperatures. We were told about this over and over again, and people repeat it and repeat it, and they hear somebody else say it, and they repeat it. And whoever checked to see if it was real? It's just a rumor mill. It's an urban legend. If you start looking at the actual evidence, it's inconsistent with molten metal or high temperatures. Like,
right.
You've been assuming it was, you know, 600, 800 degrees or whatever it was. But people can't stand in an oven that's that temperature. If you are cooking cookies in your oven at 350 degrees Fahrenheit, how long can you hold your hand in that oven?
Yeah, and I love how, of course, you got the woman standing there in the gaping hole, and she's not looking the least bit uncomfortable from intensive heat.
Right, and you have these, rescue dogs and rescue workers all over the pile. and you have all this, quote, steam coming up. I call it fuming because we don't know what it is. And it sort of looks like, reminds me of a grill. You know, 4th of July, you have a grill.
You could send, copy one of those pictures, too. I never noticed that. I didn't know that it was...
If you go to my Dirt series, go to Dirt 4. I call it the grilled cheese sandwich picture because here are these guys working on the pile, and they're in the middle of this huge amount of steam and so forth. It looks like steam.
Yeah. Okay, tell you what. Go another break. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back. Second hour with Judy Wood. Welcome back to Two Thirds Radio. We have Judy Wood on as our guest. So, yeah, Judy, what have there been any new developments, any new discoveries, new pictures coming in? Do you have people sending you pictures, you know?
I go out trolling for pictures. I have plenty of pictures to put up. I just haven't had the time to get to it. There are some new developments since I last talked with you. Not today, but, from a few weeks or a few months back.
Yeah.
And that's what started the Dirt series. a lot of people are probably familiar with that Greg Jenkins hit piece.
Yeah.
And somebody did the transcript for me, and I was putting it up and putting in the pictures that if I had been warned of what Jenkins wanted to talk to me, I would have brought, my pictures. But I had no warning. I was yanked on the way, from the audience going to the bathroom. We just want to ask you a question. Step over here. But I was looking over that transcript and remembering the event. There were various things that Jenkins did not want me to talk about. Panic. And so I got to look at those things more carefully. What are those things he wanted me to stay away from? And you look at it more and more and you realize, he knows exactly what happened in 9/11. He needs you to stay away from it. So it was very good clues, and that is what motivated the Dirt series. He wanted to say it was all coarse dust, couldn't be fine, it couldn't have gone up, had to have gone down, and all the stuff is there. So we didn't want to admit that anything had disappeared, and it was not fine dust. So I started looking at those things more and more, and that's when I started looking at the quality of this, quote, cloud of dust, and realizing these various stages it goes through, and there's different mechanisms going on. And then I realized that the pictures, once you kind of are more key to looking at things, you go back and look over your older pictures, and by golly, you see stuff, like these dirt trucks moving in. Dirt trucks after dirt trucks. Do you remember any of that?
No, not really.
And Rudy Giuliani, I have an audio recording where the next morning of the 12th, he is bragging how he had 120 dump trucks, leaving New York City overnight, implying that he had debris being hauled away.
Just en masse, just grabbing it up and scooping it up and hauling it off.
120 dump trucks. First, what hit me when I heard that is, how does he get that many dump trucks in that mayhem?
Right.
How do you organize that? You have to organize it ahead of time. 120?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They had this all worked out, didn't they?
But not only that, now I understand what the issue is.
Think
you had
about
dirt
it.
Trucks coming in.
To put this in perspective, this is the biggest crime scene in American history. There should have been thousands of people fine-tooth combing that whole area, meticulously looking at every little piece and cataloging it, photographing it. This is what you do at any crime scene, at a murder scene. This is a mass murder scene, and en masse, they're taking this debris by the ton and just quickly hauling it off to destroy it as quickly as possible. This is a felony, folks. Understand the severity of this.
Oh, no. Why do you think that it got hauled away? Because they told you it did? I start looking at the pictures, and I realize the pile gets bigger with time. It doesn't get smaller.
Oh, really?
They were bringing the trucks coming, going. That was the cover story for why the trucks were bringing dirt into the city.
Oh, in?
Yeah. You have trucks coming, going all night, so you tell people it was hauling debris away. Not that they were coming in full of dirt and leaving empty.
Oh, wait a minute. This is getting interesting. I'll tell you what, short break. We'll be right back. You got to tell me more about that. Okay, we're back on Truth Hurts Radio. Your host, Charlie Giuliani. We've got Judy Wood on the line. So you're telling me that these trucks were bringing in dirt?
Yeah, my Dirt Series, its name. That's what the dirt's about. They're bringing in dirt.
Yeah, this is new to me. So what in the world was behind that?
Well, I'm just looking at the data. Let's not jump to conclusions. That's how I approach it. So I'm looking at this dirt. I'm not trying to say, this is the answer I want, so let me go find the evidence for it. No, I'm just saying, what is this dirt? And they're bringing this, here, dirt trucks are lined up bumper to bumper coming in. And the morning of the 12th, Giuliani is bragging about 120 dump trucks. Overnight, he worded that they were leaving the city, but he didn't say they're leaving with debris in them, but he implied that. So if you were somebody who saw saw trucks coming and going, oh, they must have been hauling out debris. And so now you have an answer, and you don't keep asking questions. You move along. And that is just like the molten metal. Oh, that's why we saw fumes coming up. So you have that answer, you move along. You don't say, wait a minute. If that's that hot, why are people standing in the middle of it? So, yeah, there's plenty of dirt. And, like, right after 9/11, this is in front of WFC2. There's a picture where these workers are standing, and there's brand-new potting soil, looks like potting soil, dumped all over the yard. The streets, they scrub those real fast because the fumes coming up. And what do you do with the lawn? You put wet dirt on it. That's what you do for a chemical spill. And then the cover story is you're hauling out debris. But you look at it with time, the pile got bigger. It wasn't getting smaller for, several weeks.
I remember when I went there, this was, a year and a half, I guess, after 9/11. And you couldn't see too good because they had this big fortress fence around it. And it was lined with this white mesh screen, so you couldn't see any details. But I do remember asking, where are the foundations? I couldn't really make sense of it. There was so much junk lying around. And then when they were finally pointed out to me, the reason I didn't recognize it is because there were no holes in the ground. The foundations were just, it was just like squared off, two squared off areas.
Yeah, it's a square, smooth area of where the concrete base was, and the concrete base was not shattered.
Right, but they were the basements were filled in with dirt. I was expecting to see these gaping holes. No, it was all filled in with dirt.
Oh, for all that spring of 2002, there was dirt in there. So you talk about looking for body parts. Why, if you're looking for body parts, do you cover the site with dirt?
Yeah, I think that's when that was. It was April of 2002.
Yeah, and I've got a picture, or several pictures from March 2002, where you still have fumes coming up from
the empty
pit.
I think it was about a year later, so it was 2003. But in any case, I remember seeing the dirt and wondering where the heck is the, where are the holes? But
how does that dirt get there? You don't have that many potted plants up in the offices.
Yeah, right.
And there's pictures, within a day of 9/11, where you have brand new dirt dumped, not scattered, but in little piles. Like somebody brought in a wheelbarrow full and dumped, and you had these bucket brigades. Where's the dirt coming and going from?
Now, why would you do that at a crime scene, folks? This is something that needed to be thoroughly poured over. Keep in mind, too, they had cleanup, they had volunteers there from around the country, experts, who volunteered to help with the examination of the debris, forensics experts, you name it. And FEMA was holding them back. They wouldn't let them touch anything, look at anything. And, I've got reams of quotes from cleanup crew members who were expressing infuriation that FEMA was controlling everything and they weren't allowing these people to look at this debris. They were taking up their time, coming there, volunteering, and they weren't being allowed. He says, we've got the dream team of experts assembled here, and they can't touch it. They can't do anything.
Oh yeah, don't look too closely. If we look at like a picture for the first time, but if somebody shows it to us and tells us what's in it, we'll accept that and not look a whole lot further. Or if you go to a crime scene and if they tell you how to interpret it, then you don't ask them any questions. And I, you know, now with hindsight, we can see a lot of that going on. Like apparently they were giving slideshows to somebody of molten metal and saying this is what we had here. So the people pretty soon start forgetting if they really witnessed molten metal or not. But there are absolutely no photos of molten metal or of a hot place. Here you have a dog running underneath, you know, down around every nook and cranny looking for survivors. His feet aren't burned. His fur isn't burned. Also, I've got an audio. I haven't put this one up yet. Of they're saying that they brought somebody out. This is the morning of the 13th. They claim that they're moving stuff, and they lift up a beam, and there were two firemen that they rescued.
Mm.
They excavated them out. What were they doing, waiting in molten metal for 2 days? And they come out undamaged.
What were they, in the sub-basement levels?
Yeah.
Mm.
So now, I don't know if that's a true story, but this is what aired on the radio then. Because I later heard a CNN thing saying that 27 hours was the last person they pulled out. But they did pull some out the next morning of the 12th at 8 a.m. And they dug down to, they're in the sub-basement.
And, wow, I didn't know that.
Anyway, about the dirt. So there's this picture of WFC1. Right after the event, you have a flip car, out front, instead of being parked parallel to the curb, it's upside down, like just decided to park upside down. And then you see another picture where those things have been hauled away. The debris has been hauled off the old terrace in the front yard. And then the next picture, the next day, they bring in brand-new potting soil, cover the terrace with it. And a week later, they bring in bulldozers that scoop up the terrace and haul it away.
Is there any way to track down this trucking company to find out who they were, where they came from, where they were getting the dirt, what the motive was?
I think we as taxpayers deserve to have that information.
There's got to be a way.
With that many trucks, and certainly those dump truck drivers, who were they told that they're driving?
Yeah.
I think that's where the secrecy is about tracking who's coming and going from where. Because you got to keep somebody's mouth shut. About,
I wonder if these were Halliburton contractors.
Oh, likely. Or it's further down the feeding chain, because you don't want too many people knowing who gave what orders. But those truck drivers know when they're driving an empty truck. And they know when they're driving a full truck. So they're coming in. I've got a picture of, I think, four of them, bumper to bumper, driving south on West Street. They're north of the Trade Center complex. Driving south on West Street, and, you know, nice full loads, but they're not up to the point where the guy in the street's going to see if there's anything in the truck. It's going to look empty. And they have a tarp over the load. It's like a little bread loaf in there.
When did Giuliani make the statement again that he had all these trucks?
The morning of the 12th.
Wow.
I've got an audio of it on my dirt page.
Boy, if you could hunt down the paperwork on that and you know, confirm that this was done ahead of time, that it had to be.
Have to organize those trucks, and they knew what to expect to know to bring in the dirt. Now,
that's like that Kenny. I wonder if there's some way we could find this Kenny guy, this FEMA worker. Remember he said, oh, we were the first to arrive here to help.
Oh, Tom Kenny.
Tom Kenny, yeah. To hunt him down.
Yeah, you could say that he had the dates off by mistake or something. Because, you know, he'll by now have said that because either that, you know, or he won't be around anymore.
Yeah, well, that's like Jamie McIntyre, you know.
Right. The memory changes with time.
What a lying.
But instead of pining over what data we don't have, that's what they want us to focus on. We look at the data we do have. We didn't have, you know, mountains of material hauled off to China. Before noon on 9/11, I've got a picture. Both towers are gone. Building 7 is still standing, so we obviously know what day it is. But from the shadows, you can tell it's before noon. The ground's horizontal. Nothing's there. They couldn't have hauled it off to China by then.
Right, right.
You know, the first 20 minutes. But with this dirt, okay, so why, they bring in the dirt, put it on the terrace in front of WFC1, a week later scoop it up and haul it back out. Can you think of any innocent explanation?
Yeah, I mean, it had to be, like you said, you know, just to absorb the heat.
No, no, don't assume heat. Then you start looking at the pictures, and the one that gave me the aha moment, I've got this picture, it's on my Dirt 2 page, where we're a block or so north of the complex, just north of the Toasted Car lot, and you see the Toasted Car's on fire, so that tells you about what time it is. The car's caught on fire, or started smoldering or whatever, right after the second tower went poof. And they're not going to be really stirred up into a black cloud for another, like, 20 minutes after the tower goes. You know, it has to have time to crank up. So it's probably, like, 20 or 30 minutes after the north tower went poof. Okay, here you are north of the tower. You're upwind. And the dust cloud is cleared out, the one that went rolling along the ground. You have a clear blue sky. And you look down at the ground, and you have dust poofing up off the street. Fine, fine dust. There wasn't enough time for that fine of dust to settle out of the air.
Well, yeah, I know some pictures taken across the bay, right at the moment of collapse of the first tower, the south tower, you can see this dust rising up, glowing from some unknown light source. Where did that dust come from? The building was in the process of collapsing. Anyway, guys, stick with us. We'll be right back with Judy Wood. Okay, we're back on Two-Thirds Radio. Get Judy Wood on as our guest. So, Judy, just so I get this in perspective here, are you saying that explosives, or you don't feel that explosives were used at all? That this was?
I'm not saying they weren't used at all.
But what's that?
You know, a single explosive here, there, or a row of them, or whatever, isn't going to do what we saw. I call them decoy squibs and decoy sounds because somebody hears, you know, a bang, bang, bang or whatever, then they think, oh, that must be controlled demolition. And they quit looking further. It's a way of controlling the thinking. But just look at the data, just absorbing the data, what it's telling you. So we're back to that intersection about a block north where clear blue sky, because we're upwind, the dust has quickly settled out of the air, so it can't be fine dust. If it settles that quickly, it's not fine.
But, I mean, you think, like, Jones's findings of thermate are not valid? You don't think there's thermate
there
at all?
I don't think that he has any findings of thermate. But in addition, he hasn't shown how that could do anything. I like to use the analogy of bubblegum. Let's say I find evidence that bubblegum was in the towers. Oh, therefore, we have the smoking gun. No, I have to prove to you that bubblegum could have done what we see.
Oh, yeah, I don't. There's no doubt that thermate, it's not even an explosive. It could not have pulverized.
Right, but it's a distraction to get you to focus on, oh, what's kind of sulfur or barium or whatever's in it. But let's look at the basics.
The sulfur, yeah.
What could have happened? Now, thermite has never been used to bring down a building and control demolition.
Right.
Yeah, and how do you time it? How do you?
My take is that they probably were using multiple, every trick up their sleeve. The thermite.
I think a lot of it is a cover up, because you bet the cover up was planned more thoroughly than the event.
Oh, sure.
The cover up isn't just an accident. They don't just plan the event and then let the cover-up go haphazardly, however it falls out.
And it still continues.
Right. And I believe Building 7 is part of the cover-up. That's its main purpose. It's multi-purpose for everything. But I think that's the main purpose.
I mean, you don't think that Jones himself is trying to, quote, cover things up. I mean, the guy was basically fired over this.
He wasn't fired.
Well, smoked
I lost
out.
My job. I don't have an income.
You know,
Jones has an income.
So you aren't still teaching.
No, I lost my job because of this.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Interesting. Wow. Jones didn't lose. He didn't lose his job. He has an income. He got early retirement.
Okay, right. Yeah, I just figured that they had smoked him out early, though. You know, forced him into early retirement.
They were going to supposedly have investigation. We don't know what the truth is. They were supposedly going to investigate his, questionable research, and to stop the investigation, he did early retirement. Then they, part of the deal is they don't keep on investigating.
Kind of like a plea bargain thing.
Yeah.
But so you did lose. So, wow, I didn't know you lost your job. I thought you were still teaching there. Now, what were you, a physicist there, or what was your?
Engineer. I was in the Department of Mechanical Engineering.
Oh, okay. Son of a gun. So they fired you. Oh, just over this, obviously.
It's more complicated than that, but yeah. In any case, I don't like to dwell on those kind of things. And if we wanted to dwell on those things, we could dwell at all the, if somebody wants to play Bob's story.
Well, I certainly hope you can find something at another less sleazy university. You know, I'm sure there's got to be something.
This is an issue with our educational system. It's just the way it has evolved. Look at the Purdue, cartoon that they put out.
Sure.
What kind of educational system does that with your tax dollars?
Well, yeah, I mean, that was funded by the National Science Foundation, which, of course...
Your tax dollars at work.
Yeah, and that was personally appointed by Bush, all of its heads, so there you go with that.
But do you think that is ethical, that study?
Not even remotely.
Right. And what do you think would happen if a coworker pointed that out? Would he still be there?
Yeah, exactly.
Would he get any grant money?
Yeah, unfortunately, once you're blackballed in one university, that's it across the board, because they all depend on that, it's all centrally controlled. People think it's just, public education, quote-unquote, as if there was such a thing.
And it isn't, Darwin. It isn't a weeding out or whatever. It's a control mechanism.
Right.
There's always another reason for something than what is officially stated. Like why your grant is turned down, your proposal.
Yeah, it's not like somebody has to call up in Washington and say, hey, don't, shut this guy up, we're going to cut the funding. They don't have to do that. It's just the natural play out of things.
It's the way it's formulated. And
right.
That brings us to another interesting...
Just to throw this in the mix, it's like the faith-based initiative thing. That's how it works with the churches. They don't have to tell them, hey, shut up, don't let your minister speak out against government corruption. It just works that way because they're...
They've seen what happens if you speak out.
Right. Anyway, hold the thought. You were just going to mention something. Hold that, and when we get back from the break, you can go on with that. Stick with us, folks. Be right back. Hey, welcome back to Truth Hurts Radio. It's your host, Charlie Giuliani. We've got Judy Wood on the line. So do you remember the point you were in the middle of something when the break
The dust and how it settled out of the air very quickly, and then it started to come up off the ground. And I think we've all seen those pictures of people coming out of their hiding places, and you notice all this fuzzy stuff around their feet. The fine dust, that's like this little dust cloud around their feet. But if the dust had just settled out, it can't be that fine. If it settles out of the air in like 15 minutes, it cannot be that fine. In order to get that fine of dust, the debris or dust that landed must have continued to break down and get smaller and smaller. So at an hour later, it was finer than it was when it landed on the ground. Think of that.
And what do you think caused that?
That's what this dirt series is about, looking at the different phenomena. So, when the stuff's flying through the air, you see it trailing dust?
Yeah.
I call that the shaving cream or Alka-Seltzer effect. You have these steel wheat checks, I call them, flying through the air and kind of dissolving midair, streaming dust behind them. They land.
The outer casings of the buildings.
Right.
Yeah.
The outer columns. they're in groups, and it kind of looks like the wheat check cereal. So I've coined the term wheat checks. It's this group of three and three and three,
right,
in outer columns. But they're flying through the air, streaming dust. But you look on the ground, and they never landed. They dissolve before they hit the ground. But that dust settles out quickly, but continues to break down.
That's the same with the top section of the South Tower. This has been a big mystery, and there's never been an answer provided according to the pancake theory. You know, one floor collapsed on another.
Oh, it can't collapse sideways. You know, gravity goes straight.
Right.
Doesn't go diagonally.
Those that don't know, the South Tower top section, the top 20 floors or so, tilted at a sharp angle. And
then went poof and disappeared.
Yeah, it disappeared into the cloud of collapsing debris, and it was never seen again.
And the building below it disappeared, too.
Yeah, right.
Now, here's the thing I've discovered by looking at this dust, that, you know, stuff that just dissolves midair. Okay, and it lands, and it continues to break down. And that is what this fuming is the material continues to break down and just turn into, you know, gas or vapor or whatever, or very fine particles in the air. And that's what they needed to snuff out with the dirt. And part of the cover story is to say, oh, that's fires and it's hot molten metal. And then people quit asking questions why you have this steam-looking stuff rising. There's, on the afternoon of 9/11, there was a break in the water main on West Street, and you had this swamp, you know, kind of a lake, because the street was flooded. The street's flooded, but the shoreline has these fumes coming out. Yeah, that's not molten metal next to water that somebody's wading out into. Why isn't the person getting boiled?
Yeah, yeah.
It does make sense. And also, Chernobyl, it's thought what caused that was water being superheated. It makes an explosion. So if you had molten metal and water, you should have had an explosion. Because you had how many gallons of water poured on the site? And right after that, you had this horrendous rain.
Well, that went on that's another bizarre. I mean, that went on until mid-December or late December, December 19th.
And then they said the fires were out, but the pile continued to fume into the spring until they actually physically carted the pile of dirt away.
Yeah.
And this dirt that they carted in looks like it came from a landfill. So it has another purpose, too. It has the pens and pencils and stuff you expect to see in an office. They bring it to the site.
So you're coming at it from the premise that it was solely scalar weapons?
No. I think it's a two-step thing. I'm working on this new webpage to describe it. One of the stages you look at is, I call it lathering up. The building lathers up for its demise, like soap suds, you know, lathering up. Where you see this tremendous amount of stuff frothing out of one side of the building from top to bottom. You've seen some of those pictures.
Oh, sure.
That, I believe, is something that they've released in the building. And
so you do believe there were actual explosives, right? Because
No.
You don't think that?
The explosives, I think, were of the point of just being a decoy.
Okay.
To a distraction. But this is pretty comprehensive. I think it's a two-step thing. You think of photographic emulsion. You know how you put your film in the freezer to get more shelf life out of it? Because it's a very slow chemical reaction by itself. But once light hits that photographic emulsion, it instantly reacts. Or pretty instantly. So you slow down. It processes by itself, but then it really zaps when light hits it.
Reaction you're talking about on the steel?
I believe they have some kind of chemical they released in the building. By itself, it didn't do anything, a whole lot. It's very slow acting, but you ignite it with this other thing.
A primer, yeah.
Like a beam or something, and that would allow you to control the demolition. So the beam doesn't need to be that strong. It's just a catalyst. It's like a two-part epoxy, you know? You have the resin and the hardener. And that also explains building the Bangor Stress Building. Because you remember when the snowball, you know, the stuff is spitting out, Tower 2 is spitting out stuff on the way down?
Yeah.
So if that had that lathering up stuff, it's spilling over onto Bangor's Trust. Then when they hit it with the beam, the beam, activates the part that's hit Baker's Trust. And I believe that's why you have holes in the street. If the stuff hadn't spilled into the street and the beam hit the street, it'd be fine. But the fact that the lathering up stuff, the chemical, flowed out onto the street and then the beam hit the street, you have a hole in the street. So this Alka-Seltzer look, or whatever, that, like, in Building 7, it's the same thing. It lathers up. If I've got these pictures of Tower 1, while Tower 2 is going poof, Tower 1, they use that, people are distracted by watching the clouds roll out from Tower 2, but Tower 1 is just pretty lathering up big time. But then it comes to a noticeable stage, so they crank back the knob and quit lathering it up. Which makes me think, this is just speculation, that it could have been introduced to the ventilation system. But it's so thorough. You've seen that picture of Building 7? From top to bottom, it looks like smoke pouring out every orifice. From one of the faces?
Yeah.
Imagine if that's a chemical that when you hit it with a particular beam, it just annihilates that material.
So we're obviously dealing with a technology that, if that's indeed the case, that, the public is not privy to.
Right.
Which shouldn't surprise us, because we know that they have,
Right. And I'm just looking at what the evidence is showing us.
You can even get most people to acknowledge that they're engaging in weather modification, but they admit that they've been doing this for decades.
Oh, there's a article in the paper a couple years ago from China that they had a problem with dust, and so they ordered up rain to get rid of the dust that was in the city.
Yeah, that was in Malaysia. That was in the Wall Street Journal that talked about that, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a convenience thing. So
they contracted with the Soviet Union or Russia to create a typhoon to get rid of the dust. Yeah, remember that.
They can. It's amazing what they can do, but they keep us distracted. So
right.
Why do you think? If you're going to have a cover up of 9/11, if you were going to use some kind of new high tech weapon, you'd need a good cover up, wouldn't you? Because you're going to have people asking questions.
Yeah.
So what do? You give them an answer. You funnel them over here so you can control their thinking. People don't like to think that their thinking is being controlled. But think of the afternoon of 9/11. What were you thinking then compared to what you're thinking now? You had a trick played on you. We all did. And that shouldn't be an embarrassment. What it should be is that we start asking questions now. Ask questions of everything. Does this make sense?
Yeah, exactly. And when you stop doing that, that's when you,
You fall in.
Right. No, I'm always for an open mind to,
I see these pictures that were taken on the afternoon of 9/11 or at noon on 9/11. You don't have much material, and then you hear the story that the steel was all hauled off to China or wherever. Now I see the reason for that story.
Well, it turns out, I guess a great deal wasn't actually sent. I think that was a distraction too, because they turned some of it now into a Navy ship. A lot of it is still being kept at the JFK.
I think they pretty much had to have shipped some somewhere so they could.
Yeah.
They actually proved, at least two steel beams, so they could say the beams, plural. They can be honest too. Beams were sent to wherever.
Well, I know there was that one truck that had some material that was taken down to the docks there, and it was being tracked by satellite, that no one could touch it. And
yeah, they wouldn't want anyone to see it. That's another symptom I found of what was going on, is the rust. You were around Ground Zero shortly after the event, weren't you? Did you see this tremendous rust instantly?
I don't remember seeing rust.
There's, the toasted car lot. That's a couple blocks away, that car park.
I was there probably a year and a half later.
Oh, okay. There's a car park a couple blocks away from Ground Zero. It was on fire. But there's nothing in fire in between. There's just paper in the streets right after the towers go poof. There's paper in the streets. How'd that those cars are on fire. And then after the fire gets put out, they're tremendously rusted. Steel does not rust that fast.
Yeah, there's some kind of corrosive...
Iron rusts that fast. Steel has these other little tiny doodads in there that keep it from rusting.
Right, right.
That's why they like to use steel to build skyscrapers.
Structural steel is not made to...
So how do you get stuff instantly rusting? Or pretty much instantly?
It's been
turned into iron. It's because the molecules have been dissociated. We're talking about the tail end of whatever the effect was. It wasn't a thorough disintegration.
Yeah, I remember seeing pictures of the beams being stacked up ready to be hauled away, and they're red.
They're what?
They're red in color. They're rusted.
Oh, there's Rust-Oleum or whatever on them, or the primer paint on them. But there's also, steel pipes, like plumbing pipes, that look like they're spray-painted orange. That's on my Dirt 4 page. And I believe the picture of the digger pulling up something glowing that Jones likes to show, and it says that's evidence of molten metal. I think that is done as a cover story. I call it the Cheeto picture because there's this pipe on the ground that's uniform color orange. that trained you to say, oh, if I see any more of that orange stuff in these pictures, that must mean molten metal or hot metal, not rust. And there's a picture also I have on that page where you see the fumes coming up from the pile, and you notice it's orange. The steel is fuming orange, rusty color of smoke. In other words, it's the material is just coming apart and turning into vapor. We don't need to know how it happened in order to see that something is causing that.
What's the percentage of bodies, do you know, that they claim to have found remains from? I mean, aren't a great many of them still totally unaccounted for?
I think in those audios I have of right afterwards, what Giuliani was saying, something like 40 bodies they had parts to.
That's it?
Yeah.
Maybe
the number got up to 100 or so after that, or 200, but that's like 3,000.
Unbelievable. So, yeah, there was roughly, 2,600 people, and they only found 300 or 400 body parts representing 300 or 400 people. Now, what does that tell you?
Yeah, where are the computer screens? You know, how many computers do you think were in that building?
I mean, it's almost like they were, you know, vaporized. You can't have that happen, folks.
Hey.
And when they cremate somebody, the bodies are cooked to about 3,000 degrees to turn them to ash.
There's different chemical processes, but the dirt thing kind of implies a chemical process. But I believe that there's something that sets it off, that excites it. It's a whole lot of interesting, it's the best mystery story. Very intriguing.
Well, obviously, you know, to get that debris out the way they did, and lying to people about the condition of the air just so they could hurry up and get in there and get the debris out.
What was in the air? Think about it. If this material is coming apart, just dissolving midair, and then for days, you need to see my dirt series. There's these satellite images, like from the next day, where you have the fuming is going up into the upper atmosphere. Why does the building continue to come apart? Dissolving up into the air. Now, imagine the people who are breathing it. Whatever that chemical was that causes things to disintegrate, what does it do when it gets in your body?
Well, here they are. I mean, they're dying in droves, guys, left and right. And the media isn't covering this. They're not getting any help. They're not getting any funds for their medical costs. Look at that one guy, Vito Valente. I had him on here. He's not doing too good. I want to see if he can come on the show again sometime.
Oh, I would love to talk with him and ask him about these various things. Not what he was told to believe about what he saw, but ask him the actual questions.
He doesn't necessarily see 9/11 as an inside job, you know, but he knows that they've been lying, and they certainly lied to him and his buddies that helped clean up.
Yeah, why?
Exactly. Tell you what, wow, we're running out of time here. We got Marie, who's called in from New England.
Great.
Welcome, Marie.
Yes, hello?
Yeah, welcome.
All right. Well, I do have a couple questions for your very interesting guest. And sorry if I repeat things that you've already gone over, because it's very difficult getting your program on the website. I mean, getting your program on the shortwave. Are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. We might have
a break. Yeah, if we have to go into a break, just stick with us and you can pick up after the break. But go ahead.
All right. Well, I have a few questions. What was the goal of your research? Do you have any theories? And how do you explain the foaming that you described? What was the purpose of the dirt? What do you plan to do with all your research? And do you have a book coming out? And would you please repeat your website?
Those are some good questions, Marie. Thank you. Website is drjudywood.com, drjudywood.com.
W-O-D?
W-O-O-D.
Oh,
drjudywood.com. So it's drjudywood.
.com.
Yep. All right, thank you. And so could you answer some of those questions?
Yeah, my goal has been to...
Yeah, I've got to go a break. Marie, you can stick on the line if you want with us, and we'll be right back after the commercials. Okay, we're back here on Two Thirds Radio. Got a few more minutes left with Judy Woods. Yeah, Judy, did you remember some of the questions?
Yes, I did. As for a book, yes, and perhaps two, but... What my priorities are, if they were to make money, I'd be doing the book full time. But my priorities are to expose what really happened. That's the most important thing, and to do whatever we can do to get the bad guys and hold.
I guess you wanted a brief summary of what you think was used to take the towers down. I guess she wasn't able to hear.
What was used to take the towers down? I'm not sure. What she asked, what my goals were. My goals aren't to find out the answer. My goals are to see what really happened. Instead of, okay, here's my solution, let me go look for the evidence that supports it. That's not the scientific method.
Well, I've always said when it comes to 9/11, the important thing is not to know what did happen so much as what didn't. And we know what didn't happen.
Yeah, and I've been ruling out things, like gravity collapses out of the picture.
Elimination, right.
But then
right.
What you see what happened, don't limit yourself by what you know about, Well, I only know about slingshots, so it had to be a slingshot or nothing. Greg Jenkins likes to say it took five times the Earth's energy to destroy the towers. So that means they're still there?
Marie, are you going to say something?
I was going to say, with all that information that I've been able to hear her describe, it seems to me there is a tremendous paper trail, or there ought to be some type of some form of a paper trail.
Well, that's what I was talking about earlier, but who knows? They could have destroyed that by now.
You need to look at the front page of my website. I have a section on things that I've been doing, confronting the powers that be. We filed RFCs, that's requests for corrections, in March, and also have done several other things. If we think it's directed energy weapons used, what I call directed energy weapons doesn't mean it's conventional. It means it's a weapon that uses energy and it can be directed rather than something that's not controllable.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's a correspondence with the Directed Energy Directorate's office, top of the military operation in Kirtland Air Force Base, and a response. They refused to deny that directed energy weapons were used. But they took the Fifth Amendment.
Are you referring to neutron type of weapons?
I'm not being specific and specifying exactly. As I say, I'm not giving the serial numbers. But it's this category. If I don't know of a new gizmo they have, I'm looking at the evidence. The evidence is consistent with some kind of chemical being in the building that was then triggered by a beam. That's how you could control how the building disintegrated, in what order. But I don't know what that gizmo is. I don't know how it operates. But, ask the Energy Directorate's office, and they're mum about it. They don't say, oh, no, a directed energy weapon couldn't have done that. They did not say that.
Well, in the research, if you don't find a hard paper trail, there ought to be some way to investigate computer trails.
That would be good to do, and with Freedom of Information Act and so forth, but it's hard for, you know, an individual to do that. It would be terrific if somebody would come forward who was asked to do some of these things and didn't realize why they're being asked.
We can only hope. Unfortunately, we've kind of run out of time. I got to have you on again sometime, Judy. Keep up the good work. Keep digging. The answer's out there. Maybe some scientists will come forward at some point. Thanks, Marie, for the call. And have a great day, guys. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks.